Thank you, Chonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Friday, October the 2nd, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga. Here are our top stories this evening. Parliamentarians reject proposals for the government to take over the Premier Service Medical Aid Society's $144 million debt.
As we have seen today, our government facilitated the trade between the two peoples, the two provinces, in the area of agriculture.
Studio 7's Chris Gante will give us an update of deliberations at the United Nations General Assembly in New York. And Mozambican Governor Alberto Mondlane urges Zimbabwe to work closely with his country in order to boost the agriculture sector. Parliamentarians on Thursday rejected proposals for Zimbabwe to take over the Premier Service Medical Aid Society's $144 million debt. Our correspondent Patricia Mutatikwa has more details from Harare.
On July 16th, President Robert Mugabe gazetted Statutory Instrument 77 of 2015, which prohibits issuance of attachment orders on state property. The president evoked his presidential powers to protect PISMA's properties from being attached by service providers owed $144 million. Discussing the statutory instrument yesterday, members of parliament were in agreement that allowing government to take over the PISMA's debt was promoting corruption. Buera South Member of Parliament Joseph Chinotimba said it was wrong for the country to take over the debt.
Mr. Speaker,
Mr. Speaker, say I and my Buhera South constituency do not agree that the country should inherit the PISMA's debt. PISMA should sell its properties to offset the debt.
Fortune Chasi, another ZANPF legislator representing Mazoe South, expressed the same sentiments.
By the looks of things, we seem to be a government that wants to reward corruption. This is not going to come thunder, come storm. If the push comes to a shove.
MDCT lawmaker Jessima Jome of Harare West was also not happy at all about moves to take over the debt. The House, which in many cases debates issues along parties and lines, showed rare unity, with Priscilla Misaira Mbwimushonga of the MDC, led by Professor Washman Ngube, noting that members of parliament were debating the issue in an objective manner.
For some of us, it is a historic day because both sides of the House are in total agreement, and I'm hoping that we can continuously look at things in this manner.
Harare resident Amos Diroto praised the legislators for speaking against parceling the debt to the government.
I think what the legislators did yesterday is quite commendable, given that the president was just used at bulldozing such laws in favor of those who have plundered our resources.
Another resident, Samson Zingai, urged government to ensure that those that contributed to the collapse of PISMAS be held accountable.
I think it is an abuse of power on the part of the president to evoke his presidential powers, especially on this PISMAS bill, because we know those powers, they exist in the constitution, but then for him to invoke it so that the people will assume the debt that was accrued through misuse and misgovernance and corruption is quite bad, and there were no investigations that were taken.
The government also took over the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe debt a couple of months ago after the RBZ Debt Assumption Act sailed through Parliament, despite fierce resistance from members of the opposition. The RBZ owed service providers $1.35 billion, which was taken over by the government. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
Deliberations continued today at the United Nations General Assembly in New York where some delegates focused on global violence. Our reporter Chris Gande is in New York covering the event. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Pandegil.
Can you give us an update of what is going on today at the UN General Assembly?
Yes, today there was a continuation of the general debate and the statements that were given by the leaders of countries, a number of countries actually, countries like the Syrian Arab Republic, Iceland, Grenada, Congo, Sudan, Philippines, Jamaica, Niger, amongst the others. And as you know, this is coming to an end. This the General Assembly is coming to an end.
Yes, and what was the major highlight today?
Yes, the major highlight today was the presentation by the mission, the Indian mission, which discussed the International Day of Nonviolence, I beg your pardon, which is marked every year on the 2nd of October.
Yes, if you can shed us more light about this day.
Yes, the United Nations General Assembly made a resolution in 2007, which established the commemoration of this International Day. It is actually the day that the Indian former movement and pioneer of the philosophy and strategy of nonviolence, Mahatma Gandhi's birthday is actually on the second day, and on the 2nd of October. So this is the day that was set aside, and it is a day which the General Assembly made a resolution in 2007 to commemorate the day.
Would you say such a day has any significance in nations like Zimbabwe?
Oh, yes, because according to the deliberations, of course, we were not briefed on the actual presentation, but we were given just an informal kind of look at what was discussed. But generally, you know, they were talking of violence, both into domestic violence and, political violence. So, you know, a country like Zimbabwe faces those kinds of violence, you know, that kind of violence. So I think this is a day which is quite important, although I'm noting that in Zimbabwe it's hardly commemorated.
Yes, and what is going on tomorrow?
Tomorrow, there's still a continuation of deliberations at the General Assembly, and there's going to be presentations on the plenary meetings by countries like El Salvador, Hungary, Guinea, Dominica, Guinea-Bissau, Singapore, Cote d'Ivoire, amongst others.
Thanks, Chris. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. Bye.
The governor of Mozambique's Manica province, Alberto Mondlane, who officially opened the 2015 Manicaland Agricultural Show in Mutare today, urged Zimbabwe to work closely with his country in farming and trade and to make it easy for citizens of both nations to move across the border in order to enhance development. Our correspondent, Lloyd Amoyo, attended the event and filed this report.
Mr. Mondlane said his country is prepared to work with Zimbabwe in the turning around of the agricultural sector in the two countries.
I would like also to propose another area of partnership, as we have seen today that our government facilitated the trade between the two peoples, the two provinces, in the area of agriculture to produce macadamia, banana, apple, and other products.
He said since Zimbabweans and Mozambicans near the border share the same culture and normally mingle at will, there is need to relax entry and exit regulations at border posts.
It is to create conditions for our people in order to have official cross point in Katio, Honde, and many more, in order to provide security and allow the facilitation of crossing borders.
He praised President Robert Mugabe's disputed and controversial land reform program that sought to give land to landless black Zimbabweans, stressing that the initiative should be fully implemented to avert hunger in Zimbabwe. Addressing the same event, Agriculture Deputy Minister responsible for livestock production, Paddy Janda, urged communal farmers to produce adequate maize grain to feed the nation, as they used to do before the land seizures.
We can still produce enough maize for ourselves. Maninga Land Minister represents a big opportunity for both dairy farming and horticulture export. And we have already seen the potential in dairy farming, particularly in Chipinga and other surrounding areas.
Maninga Land Provincial Affairs Minister Mandi Chimene, who also addressed the event, said she felt honored to host the Mozambican counterpart, noting that they would consider holding joint farming expos with the province of Maninga, Mozambique. The Maninga Land Agricultural Show Society Vice President Peter Dopropoulos said this year's show had improved with more than 100 exhibitors compared with past years, where less than 70 firms and individuals participated at the event. He said the 2015 show was unique in the sense that the livestock section was back in full force after being absent for a decade. Some exhibitors told Studio 7 business was slow when the show kicked off on Thursday. One of them, Tinashe Chindrende, a microfinance exhibitor, said his stand is still recording few business deals and visits.
A number of people are visiting our stands in response to the posters we have just put around this agricultural show. And I've also witnessed that people are showing interest. People are failing or are not willing, let me say, to show a direct response, as they have visited this place for some reasons. Maybe they are carrying their own businesses.
Another exhibitor, Faustina Tichawangana of the Catholic University of Zimbabwe, said she is happy with the visits at her stand and is hopeful business will pick up on Saturday.
Yesterday, it was very low. Today, quite improved. We're expecting maybe that tomorrow things will improve.
A variety of activities are lined up at the show, such as horse riding, tug of war, skydiving, fireworks, and dog drills, among others. The show ends on Sunday. Reporting for Studio 7 in Mutare, this is Lloyd Damoyo.
The hunger situation in the driest regions of the country is getting worse, with the elderly being the most affected. The unavailability of electricity has compounded the situation in areas where water can only be pumped by electric motors or pumps. Deputy resident Stanley Torima told Studio 7 Sandra Nyaira that the situation is really bad in the area.
The situation is very tough. Water is nice. People are actually having a hard time here. We are failing to have water. We have to travel to fetch our water to the nearby community.
And in terms of the hunger situation, what is it like? What is the situation currently prevailing on the ground, in particular looking at the older people within the community?
Oh, it's very difficult. People are starving. There is nothing. You know, this region does not receive much rainfall. And if at all people got something, they got something just to survive up to June. Now there is totally nothing. They are actually suffering. They can't even afford 2 meals a day.
What do you think can be the solution to this? Is the government understanding your plight as the people in that region?
The government might be understanding the problems facing people of this region, but the government does not have a solution. For example, when you phone to ZESA people in Wange, they will tell you their machines are very old. Those machines need replacement. And what it means, those replacements, you need to save money. That the government is broke. The only solution would be, I think the government so far must be changed. That is the only solution, because they can't plan.
That was Deputy Resident Stanley Torima on the line with Studio 7, Sandra Nyaira. You are listening to Studio 7 live from the Voice of America in Washington. Now a look at regional and international news. Hurricane Joaquin pounded islands of the central Bahamas with torrential rain and powerful wind and waves today, but forecasters at the U.S. National Hurricane Center said it was not likely to hit America's east coast. The European Union has imposed sanctions on four Burundians, it says undermined efforts to peacefully resolve the country's political crisis. They include a former general who took part in a failed coup on May 13 and is allegedly responsible for grenade attacks and incitement to violence. Investigators are attempting to determine why a lone gunman went on a shooting rampage at a local college in rural southern Oregon as a shocked community mourned the victims and comforted the survivors. And the Vatican says Pope Francis' U.S. meeting with Kim Davis, a state court official jailed for refusing to issue same-sex marriage licenses, should not be constructed as an expression of support for her position. Thousands of persons with disabilities in Zimbabwe say they are struggling to make ends meet in a nation with high unemployment levels. Our correspondent, Gandre Muramba, reports from Maswingo.
Thousands of persons with disabilities in the country living in the rural areas are facing starvation as economic woes continue to bedevil the country. Persons with disabilities and their families who spoke to Studio 7 said life has become hell due to economic hardships. Some villagers with disabilities said they have been reduced to beggars for survival as they cannot afford basic needs, especially in the absence of a social welfare system to provide for them. Andrew Mutumuchuku of Bani Rural Community, some few kilometers south of Maswingo City, shares his plight.
We were living on government help. Now the government is not doing anything. I cannot go to the fields and work in the fields there. Even if those seeds which the government gives to people don't have access due to corruption, my family now is starving.
Jacob Nema, a parent of disabled child in Maswingo with special care needs, told Studio 7 life has become a nightmare.
It is very difficult to send our children to school. The wheelchairs which were given some years back, they are worn out. We can't afford even the medication. We are really suffering.
National Council of Disabled Persons of Zimbabwe, or NCDPZ, confirmed the situation is bad for almost everyone in the country, but dire for people living with disabilities. National Task Force member Farai Chirera says the situation was aggravated by lack of national policy framework to recognize and respect the rights of persons living with disabilities. She, however, urged government to harmonize the United Nations Convention of Persons with Disabilities with the new constitution and other laws of the country to improve their lives of the affected disabled persons.
We are requesting our government to harmonize the laws of the country with the UN Convention on the Rights of Disabled People, because we are seeing it's taking too long since they signed it and ratified. I think if something is harmonized to align also on the UN Convention on the Rights of Disabled People, I think we'll get the services, because it will be written black and white, which we need.
Zimbabwe ratified the United Nations Convention of the Rights of the Disabled in September 23, but is yet to align this with the country's laws. As a result, charges Chirera that the lives of the persons living with disabilities in Zimbabwe will continue to worsen, also in the absence of proper facilities and systems desperately needed to uplift their lives. Reporting for Studio 7 in Maswingo, this is Gandhi Maramba.
Bulawayo town clerk Mickleton Nyoni, who died on Sunday, was buried at the city's Lady Stanley Cemetery today. Nyoni succumbed to cancer at a Harare hospital where he was receiving medical treatment. Speakers at the gravesite eulogized Nyoni, saying it would be difficult to fill the vacuum that he has left. Bulawayo Mayor Martin Moyo tells reporter Ntunga Milingomo the city has been robbed of a focused leader.
As a city, the first thing that we will miss is his leadership, his vision and his foresight. Those are qualities that he displayed, and those are qualities that we relied upon to drive the programs of the city forward. And then the next thing that we are going to miss is his friendship. When you work with someone for a long time, you begin to develop a relationship. We had a relationship. relationship with Ugbesinyoni, even as councillors. He was not a councillor, he was our CEO, our chief executive, but he was really more of a colleague. So that friendship, that collegialship is going to be missed by, not just by me, but by many who interacted with the late councillor.
And how did the burial go?
The burial went very well. We really are happy that we were able to take that on our shoulders and give him a decent send-off. It was a well-attended burial. In Africa, burials are a community thing. And so this was a Bulawayo burial. And the numbers that came showed that we are burying a son of Bulawayo, one that we consider a hero.
That was Bulawayo City Mayor Martin Moyo on the line with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo from the city of Bulawayo. The 17th edition of the Zimbabwe Film Festival kicks off in Harare tomorrow with over 50 films being shown in low and high density suburbs as the organization seeks to bring more Zimbabweans to the big screen. Among the major highlights of the festival is a film about the ZANU-PF MTC unity government era that producers say is a must watch. Director Nigel Munyati says all is set for the annual festival that runs until Saturday, October the 10th.
During that time, we'll be showing approximately 50 films from Zimbabwe, Africa, and the rest of the world. Our theme this year is documentation, and documentation is a play on the two genres of our documentary and animation film genres. We have chosen that theme because we believe that, we know that those are two film genres that are least popular in Zimbabwe, and yet they are very, very important in terms of, particularly when you look at things like what I call preserving our heritage. You and I, maybe not you, but definitely me, because I'm sure I'm much older than you. We grew up on, you know, stories of Tsuro Nagudo, the hare and the baboon, you know, and you know how much of an educative process that was. You know, we learned a lot through the stories of Tsuro Nagudo, whether it was in terms of learning certain things about our culture, about just our social etiquette, or even just pure entertainment, something that made you laugh. We've lost all of that. And we believe that our youngsters, you know, have a lot to gain from that. The irony of it is that when you look at what is happening outside of Africa, that some of the most popular, you know, animation films of today are about Africa, you know, Lion King, Madagascar, and so on. So someone else is telling stories that we should be telling, but because we've got our focus in the wrong places, you know, we're not telling those stories. Come to documentation or documentary filmmaking. You know, we've gone through a very, very important phase in our, you know, contemporary history, but no one has taken the time to document, you know, our War of Liberation, for example. There's only been one film about the War of Liberation that's been produced in 34 years. That's a shame. You know, look at the Vietnam War. You know, there have been thousands of films about the Vietnam War and glorifying America in that process. And yet, you know, America actually didn't win the war. So, you know, these are some of the things that we are not appreciating, that there's so much power in the art of film, and we need to start harnessing that power for our sake as Africans, and in this particular case as Zimbabweans.
Who are the major people that you could say these film players that you're going to be highlighting at this festival?
Our opening film is Timbuktu, which chronicles, you know, some of the experiences in Mali during times when they've had to contend with Islamic extremism. Our second key main film is called Goodbye Lenin, the German film about the bringing down of the Berlin Wall.
That was Zimbabwe Film Festival director Nigel Munyati. The festival goes to Mutare, Masvingo, Gweru and Bulawayo a week after Harare under the name Ziff Towers. The future of Cuthbert Dube as president of the Zimbabwe Football Association is hanging by a thread by each passing hour. Our Reporter Michael Cariati tells us why.
Zimbabwe Supreme Football Body, the ZIFA Council, is meeting tomorrow to decide the future of the man who has been at the helm of Zimbabwean football for the past 5 years. Dube was initially removed from office by the same ZIFA Council on May 16, but this was nullified by FIFA on the premise that the decision was unconstitutional as it was not on the agenda. However, the councillors have made it clear their intention this time around to the extent that they are prepared to foot their own bills for the trip to Harare after ZIFA announced that they did not have the financial resources to make this extraordinary general meeting a reality. Even football fans are clamoring for Dube's exit, and one of them, Ishmael Makwaza, says Dube must do the honorable thing by resigning today instead of waiting to be thrown out. However, Dube, who has pumped out more than $1 million of his own money into Zimbabwean football, says the Zimbabwean football family should be thanking him instead of thinking of getting rid of him.
You assist, you rescue an action, and there's no gratitude. If anything, there is the him for us, Dube must go. There is that lack of gratitude.
This is the politics of the field of play, but on the field, action continues. The Chibuku Super Cup semi-finals moved to Mandava Stadium, but this time not with double headers. The first of the semi-finals is on tomorrow between ZPC Kariba and Harare City, while the second features overwhelming favourite Dynamos against Air Force of Zimbabwe side Chapungu on Sunday. Dynamos coach Tondera Indiraya is confident his team will win, adding that their aim is to win the trophy.
We want to get all the way to the final, but we are quite confident. We want to get this cup.
Diraya, however, is wary of the threat that Chapungu poses and says they are not taking the Gweru-based airmen lightly.
They are quite a physical side, quite a difficult opponent. They knocked out the league leaders, you know, and it was not an easy afternoon for Chikeni. So we expect the same when we play them.
At the same time, the Mighty Warriors are on their way to Yaounde in Cameroon for their 2016 Olympic Games qualifier. Now to cricket. The disappointing Zimbabwe national team is out to salvage some pride when they engage visiting Pakistan for the second of their 3 ODI series. The Zimbabweans lost the two 2020 matches and the first ODI and are desperate for results. However, observers are of the opinion that results will never come for as long as the same disappointing team continues to represent the country. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Stay tuned for Studio 7 Live Talk at 8:30 p.m. when our host will be talking with listeners and experts about Parliament's move to reject proposals for the government to take over the Premier Service Medical Aid Society's $144 million debt. Now to recap today's top stories. Parliamentarians reject proposals for the government to take over the Premier Service Medical Aid Society's $144 million debt. And Mozambican Governor Alberto Mondlane urges Zimbabwe to work closely with his country in order to boost the agricultural sector. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Ntunga Milingomo. This is Sithandekile Mhlanga in Washington.